From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Happy birthday, America. Throughout the night, some patriotic bumper music for you. Later on tonight, has investigator Joshua P. Warren discovered a time warp? We'll talk with him about that, too. Here's what's happening. A woman has climbed the base of the Statue of Liberty today, and seven people have been arrested on Liberty Island, all of whom are believed to be protesters. The woman is affiliated with a group called Rise and Resist, though the organizer of the group says this was not sanctioned. That wasn't part of it, but we were concerned about her safety. She has been retrieved. They've been protesting immigration and policies like that. President Donald Trump last August asked several top foreign policy advisors about the possibility of invading Venezuela during a meeting about diplomatic sanctions that the U.S. was enacting on that government. Mr. Trump's aides, including then National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, vigorously urged him against the notion of a military invasion of Venezuela, warning him it could backfire. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Boy, John, that could have been a disaster.
Well, first of all, it's a completely exaggerated and fake news report. I mean, really what happened, George, was there was a coup and a totalitarian takeover in Venezuela, a military dictatorship of this Maduro, and it was no different than what happened down in Panama with Manuel Noriega or Baby Doc in Haiti, or any of these tin pot dictators around the planet. And all Trump was doing, he was having a discussion with the Colombian president, Manuel Marquez, and the discussion was about what can be done in order to save those poor people, those individuals that just lost all of their freedom in Venezuela and have to live under this misery. And that's as far as it went. And of course, the very unhappy media with Trump blows this into Trump was going to invade Venezuela. No, he wasn't. He was sending a message to Maduro: you better mind your P's and Q's, because if this dictatorship goes any further and we see, you know, massacres and genocide and violations of human rights, we will go down and we will take you out. That was the message.
And what's happening today? What's going on there now in Venezuela?
He's consolidated the dictatorship. I mean, and they're an absolute disaster, Venezuela, right now. A crackdown that the Southern Hemisphere hasn't seen since, you know, some of these Latin American dictators of the past. And so it's an ongoing situation, and that the State Department is watching very carefully. But there's no plan. There was never any plan. It was simply a messaging that you can't get away with this. We're watching you right now. That was it.
John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. A British couple hospitalized in critical condition. They were apparently exposed to the same nerve agent that nearly killed a former Russian spy, and they lived near him. So maybe something leaked over. A 92-year-old woman from Arizona shot and killed her 72-year-old son in order to avoid being sent to a care home. Anna Mae Bessing, who is charged with murder, contemplated her son's intentions to put her into care for days before she shot him. A Texas mother has been arrested for selling her young children. The 29-year-old was arrested by the Texas Department of Public Safety after she apparently sold her 7-year-old boy to two men. She was in the process of selling two other children, a 2-year-old girl and a 3-year-old as well. Jeez. Tens of millions of Americans in the Midwest and on the East Coast have been facing brutally hot temperatures and stifling humidity as they celebrate the 4th of July holiday. Climatologist Dr. Tim Ball with us. Tim, why is it so hot?
Well, it's hot because it's summertime, and what you're seeing going on is the natural pattern of weather. There's nothing abnormal. The idea that there were extreme temperatures was put out by a group called Public Citizen and Climate Works, and they don't have any climate expertise at all. You notice that Al Gore didn't claim that there were record temperatures. What is also masking with this, George, is that there are record cold temperatures in the western United States, and that's not being reported. For example, Eugene, Oregon recorded 38 degrees Fahrenheit on the 3rd of July, and that's the coldest day in 104 years on that day. And also at the same time, 21 remote automatic weather stations in Oregon recorded below freezing temperatures, 21 of them. So what you're seeing is that jet stream we've talked about so often, pushing up in on the eastern side, pushing down on the western side. But the cold is more newsworthy and important than what's happening with the warmth.
So the Earth cycle once again, huh, Tim?
An Earth cycle, yeah. And also, by the way, the, on the 26th of June, I think it was. Yeah, 26th of June, they recorded the coldest temperature in Antarctica, minus 144 degrees Fahrenheit. And that hardly made the news either. So this is the pattern that we see with fake news.
Thank you, Tim. Good to have you with us. I love talking about trends, and nobody does it better than Gerald Celente, and he's our guest next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. Gerald Celente back with us. Gerald is the founder and director of the Trends Research Institute, the number one trend analyst in the world. Gerald accurately forecasted the dot-com meltdown, the 1997 Asian currency crisis, the stock market crash of 87, and, of course, a regular guest here on Coast to Coast. His most recent books include Trends 2000, Trend Tracking, and What Zizi Gave Honey Boy. That's a different story. Gerald, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, thanks for having me, and happy 4th of July.
You too.
It's wonderful being on with you.
Lots to talk with you about, but I want your reaction about Sears announcing that they're going to close more stores. They're getting hit by the dot-coms, aren't they?
Yes and no. It, matter of fact, you know, we just came out with our mid-year report of the top trends for 2018, and one of them is brick-and-mortar bounce back. When you look at the entire field of online shopping, you know, depending on whose numbers you're looking at around 13% of retail sales. Sears is it's a 125-year-old brand that didn't grow with the times. It's a dead brand. And so what we're looking at is we're seeing bounce backs in other places in retail. And, of course, there's again, you know, there's no question about it that we're going to keep seeing more and more stores close. But, you know, you mentioned my book, Trends 2000. And in that book, one of my chapters was The Pall on the Mall. And the point that I made was that they were overbuilding throughout America, and it was all the same. You went to one, you went to them all. And again, you know, it's online. This is according, again, to the Commerce Department. And the Commerce Bureau of Statistics says e-commerce sales for the first quarter of 2018 grew by $123.7 billion, but that accounts for only 9.5% of total retail sales. And their estimates, George, are that by 2021, it'll level off at about 15%. So people still want the shopping experience, but they're tired of that one. It's more of the same.
That's right. And Sears, of course, they're like the dinosaurs of old, aren't they?
That's what I was saying. You know, they didn't change with the times. And it just, you know, you go in there, they're run-down places, they have no vibe to them. And that's what happens with a lot of these. And again, they overbuilt.
Yep.
And that's the big one as well.
And they own Kmart, and I assume the Kmart experience is the same as Sears?
Again, you know, when they bought Kmart, Kmart was on the way down. You know, so they bought a loser on the way down.
Yeah.
It had its time, and they didn't change with the times.
What are you seeing for the trends for the future, Gerald?
Oh, there are a lot of them going on. You know, when I talk about this, the malls, I mean, you remember when, you know, I remember being a young guy when I started working in the corporate world, and I'm flying around different places in the States. And I remember one time going to Kansas City, and this is like about 1974, 75. And when I landed, they wanted to take me to the new mall. Like, you know, so, and you remember how the malls, we're talking about Sears and these big anchor stores, how they dragged all of that business out of the hometowns, out of the main streets.
You took it away from the small mom and pop stores.
Exactly, and the main streets became dead streets. Now we're looking at a bounce back on, we call it organic city growth. Because the malls that are closing down, people are still, again, people, the numbers are there from the Commerce Department. People are still going shopping, but now they're going also shopping for that hometown experience. So we're finding around the country that these once great little cities that died for a variety of reasons are bouncing back, particularly if they're like within 90 minutes of an airport. And so people, they can't afford to live. Look at the people leaving places like San Francisco and L.A. and New York City. They can't afford to live there anymore. So we're looking at, again, these things are cyclical. The malls came. They saw, they conquered, they had their time, they're closing down. Now the people, particularly the millennials, now they're having children. They want to get out of these big, ugly cities that lost their vibe. And I'm in New York, I don't even want to go down there anymore. You know, it's nothing. You know, all it's one glass menagerie. You know, there's no beauty anymore. So they're going to these organic growth cities, the cities that made America the beautiful place it was. When it was building, the architecture, the streets, the layout. So that's, again, the positives and the negatives.
What are they going to do with the great real estate that these malls used to occupy, the huge parking lots and the buildings, too?
They're going, you know, they keep coming up with these things. They're going to put medical centers in there and this and that, but it's mostly hype, and they're going to knock them down a lot, just like what happened when, you know, I'm up here in Kingston, New York, and this used to be a big place for IBM. They used to do their mainframe computers. And, you know, they had all these buildings up here. And they left, the buildings came down. Same thing with the malls. Some of them are going to be revitalized for some reasons. But most of them, they had their day. And again, you look at the facts. You know, we're an aging population. People don't want to get in a car and drive to go somewhere. And the millennials, you know, they're not even buying cars like they used to in the old days. So you're going to, they talk a lot about the mall business being revitalized by putting, you know, medical and this or that into it. But we think most of them are going to go down.
We're with Gerald Celente. We're talking trends. We'll take calls with Gerald next hour here on Coast to Coast. Gerald, you say that something dramatic is going to happen in that smart companies will start promoting themselves as unity companies. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, again, you know, here we are again, the 4th of July, and we call it the come together trend. You know, in my lifetime, I've never seen, and you know, I'm a political atheist. I don't take sides on things.
No, I'm like you.
We call the trends the way we see them. And, you know, in my lifetime, after a president got elected, well, you know, maybe you don't like who got elected, but we all have to unify behind that person, except this election. As soon as Trump won, the Russians did it. This happened. That happened. It never stopped.
Yeah, this one's divided. I mean,
exactly.
And it's getting worse.
Like nothing we've ever seen, the divided states of America. And you go, the story out now is the Daily News, and nothing newspaper in New York City. And they have a picture of Trump like a clown, you know, and with a crown on him, his head. And so what we're saying is, end the divisiveness. If you're a marketer, sell unity. And there's no better example of it happening. We call it the come together trend. Yes, we know how divided it is, whether it's Me Too, whatever it might be. Look, George, you're hearing things about people saying Civil War 2.0.
Yeah, no, it's crazy, yeah.
So what we're saying is there's no better example of a marketer using divisiveness to sell their product and help bring the nation together than back in 1971. You had racial tensions, you had civil unrest, you had the Vietnam War, and all of a sudden, it's the real thing.
The Coke commercial.
You got it. Do you remember the little kids on the hill? They
people of all races together holding up a Coke and doing
and
their thing.
Teach the world to sing in perfect harmony.
Yep.
That still rings in the hearts and minds of those of us like you and me, old enough to remember.
That was a brilliant campaign, by the way.
It was brilliant. And that's what we're saying to marketers now. Get off this kick about divisiveness. Bring the people together. And the divisiveness is within families. They're arguing all the time about what's going on politically. So we're telling our business people and our subscribers to the Trends Journal, who are marketers and people in business, sell harmony. The teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. When they had these little kids on a hilltop in Italy, all different races, holding hands, there's no better example, and no one's doing it now.
We have one thing different now than we didn't have in 1971, and that's social networking. How has that affected all this?
You know, to an extent, it has. But what it really has done, as we see it, is dumb people down. You know, they used to have the news sound bites. Now it's not even that. It's a tweet and it's a nothing. But again, even with that, you can use that to the positive. And no one I know out there in the major business field is taking advantage of this. And a candidate, anybody running for office, bring the people together.
What's going on with the world of trends that have to do with, technology and people buying things? What's happening there?
Well, you know, the technology thing, you know, we're looking at the smartphone as a stupid phone. Really, you know, it hasn't made people smarter. And people are distracted. You know, when I was a little kid, and maybe it happened with you too, you know, one of the people say, you know, you don't speak Italian. I said, they used to speak Italian when they didn't want us to, hear
they
what they
didn't want
saying.
You to know what you were saying. That's right.
And then they used to have, when they saw us hanging around, they would say, little pitchers have big ears. And they chase you out of the room. They didn't want you to hear. And I attribute to much of who I am, of course, all of who I am, my ancestors, but what I learned from the adults. Now you go out, George, and what do you see? A little kid that can't even talk yet, sitting there with a thing in front of their hand, totally disconnected to their parents.
Yes. I just came back from the airport just a couple days ago. And we had a special conference and convention, and everybody, I'm watching all these people at the airport, Jerry. All of them are looking at their smartphones, their phones, texting away or doing whatever they're doing. A whole row of people that were sitting in front of me, all of them had these phones. It's unbelievable.
What is so important about what's going on? Oh, by the way, I don't carry a cell phone. I have one that I keep in my car and one when I travel, so I tell the car which gate I'm at. I began doing research for the Cellular Telecommunications Industry Association back in the early 90s when they used to have these big boxes in the trunk with an aerial on them. And I followed it forever, you know, since that time. And there are a lot of real health hazards with this. It's going
sure.
to be like when they talk about, you know, look, it wasn't until the late 90s you had the top heads of the tobacco companies talking to Congress saying that they had no evidence that smoking was dangerous to your health. They're doing the same thing with this. They're very dangerous, and particularly for younger children where the shield on their brain shield is much thinner. And so every time these studies come out, there's no news anymore in the sense that all of the media's, you know, the newspapers aren't what they used to be anymore. You don't have reporters feet on the street, so that it's not being reported. So anyway, I won't carry one, and what do I need it for? I don't want to be interrupted. I don't want to be talking. Oh, George, I got to go now. I got to go text as we're talking. You know, I mean, so what we're saying is, we're seeing developments in very positive ways, and one of them is going to be, by the way, again, not in that area, but one of the ones we see is the biggest change is in our education system.
All right, let's talk about that when we come back. Gerald Celente with us as we talk trends, and we'll take calls next hour with Gerald about trends and get you to jump in with some feedback on that. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hope you had a great Independence Day. It's kind of strange because most everybody's got to go back to work tomorrow. It's going to throw everybody's week off. Asheville, North Carolina, here's a week that's coming up. August 25th, our live stage show at the Diana Werthen Theater. One of our guests will be Joshua P. Warren, who will be our guest later on tonight. And he's got some great things to talk about, but we're going to have a great event, live music, meet and greet. It's a fun show. You can get your tickets by going to our website, coasttocoastam.com. Click events at the top of the homepage or in the carousel reel. You'll see the revolving Asheville, North Carolina show, which is Saturday, August 25th. And welcome back to Coast, Gerald Celente with us as we talk trends. We'll take calls with him next hour. Gerald, you were talking about education will be a change. What's going to happen?
Yep, you were asking me about the, you know, big changes in technology, and that's really one of them. And, you know, the education system we have, and anybody could look this up, I'm not making it up, it's based on an industrial age model created by Germany. And, of course, you know, they were the biggest and one of the best industrialists in the world.
They were.
And they took people off their farms and localities, and they put them in centralized locations and taught them how to read, write, and do some math and follow orders. I mean, I call what they call public school, I call brainwashing school. I mean, you know, the system isn't working. We're taxed very heavily for our education system. And then when you look at the data, and the data, again, doesn't lie, we don't even win, place, or show when it comes to things like science and math against other industrialized nations, and top industrialized nations in the world. So the new system is what we call interactive view. We're talking about the negatives of technology, now the positives. You know, with artificial intelligence and it's developing and virtual reality particularly, with virtual reality, you feel like you're sitting in a classroom. You know, why should a thing called a general education, you have to learn biology, you have to learn chemistry, but not everybody's suited for that.
No.
But no. You don't. No, our state said this is what you have to do, and you have to follow orders. And that's what the education system is. So if anybody says, you know, Celente's going off the end over here and he doesn't know what he's talking about, again, I would say look at the data. And number two, if the education system works so well, you think our country would be doing a lot better now?
You would think.
You would think. So it's interactive view. And India is the model where it's happening. It's a poorer nation, but by the way, their GDP is growing the fastest in the world, but that's going to slow down. That's, everything is tied together with it. These oil prices keep going up because 80% of their oil energy needs comes from importing it. So, and oil's based in dollars, and their rupee right now is an all-time low against the dollar. But anyway, they have 200 million students, K-12. United States just has 51 million students. They're doing interactive education with virtual reality, artificial intelligence, and they're training the kids and to be who they want to be and bringing out the best in that person. So now with virtual reality, and by the way, they're doing it now with doctors doing operations with it. You know, so we're already using it throughout society. So now you're teaching the child to be the best of the skills and the instincts and the talents that that person has rather than general education. You all have to learn this. So India is the model where it's really starting to happen. Now think of also, you could have the best teacher in the world in the subjects that you really want to learn about, rather than having people that pass the state test and having you read a book and take a test. So now you could have the best of the field that you want to excel in. To us, this is one of the biggest changes that's going to come about. However, having said all that, it's going to be very slow moving in the United States. And that is primarily because the entrenched systems, the educational iron curtain, the academic iron curtain, isn't going to want to let loose of their power.
Gerald, what about what's going on now with marijuana, where states are beginning to legalize it, and now even the federal government's thinking of this?
Yep. Well, George, you know, we forecast this over 2.5 years ago. We called it reefer money madness, and that's the bottom line. Colorado, they're making more money in taxes on marijuana than they are on booze, and that's the bottom line from it. And, you know, why did they legalize gambling, you know, to make money? So now, and by the way, the medical marijuana, too, the breakthroughs, they're real in that.
They are
real. Yeah, you know, as I say, you know, if the planet could feed us, could it heal us? And, you know, I don't know if you know this. I have an honorary doctorate from the National University of Health Sciences for the work I've done in complementary and integrative medicine.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, over the years. The first book I worked on back in the mid-'80s was Natural Healing. So I'm very much into, you know, healing naturally. I try to not to, you know, I try to stay away from the other stuff. But anyway.
Well, you're right about the planet. The planet has the ability to heal every illness or ailment that is out here.
Of course. There's no allotropic drug on the market that cures a chronic degenerative disease. That's a fact. So now going back to the medical marijuana and marijuana beyond that, you're looking at, in marijuana right now, they just lifted prohibition in 1933. That's where we're at with this. The expansion from here is going to be gigantic. And again, it's going to, as you mentioned, and you know well, that there's going to be many, many other developments in natural healing products from, you know, plant-based.
Yes.
By the way, big one, too, is that the baby boomers are aging, and they're not aging very well. We're looking at obesity rates in people over 20 years old in this country between 60 to 70%.
They're not as healthy as we were at that age.
You know, I love watching these old movie clips back in the 50s. And every young person and most old people, they all look fit. You know, these early 1950s movies.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if you want to, you know, what you want to eat junk, you're going to turn into junk. So anyway, the whole all of this is all connected. Whole health healing hasn't taken off in the level that we believe it can and should. But you're going to start seeing it, and medical marijuana is going to be one of those elements that's going to bring it to reality.
I think so, too. And the companies that are getting involved in it now on the ground level could be huge 5-10 years from now.
Oh, again, this is the end of prohibition.
Yeah. Now, what do you see trend-wise economically with the way things are going today, and what do you see in the next couple of years?
Well, again, you know, all this talk you're hearing about tariffs and trade wars, we're not buying into any of that at all. When you look at the real numbers, George, they don't add up to hardly anything. Like, let's say on Friday, Trump goes ahead and says to China, we're putting $34 billion in tariffs. Okay, that accounts for 0.1% of China's GDP.
Jeez.
That's a fact. This is a negotiation step as we see it. That's not going to hurt the economy. What we see is going to hurt the economy. First of all, there's a slowdown. I mentioned
you do say that there is going to be a hurt?
Yeah, it's interest rates. What juiced the markets, everybody knows this. Look, when I took Economics 101 in college and in graduate school, they never told me anything about zero and negative interest rate policy and quantitative easing. And it was a Ponzi scheme that lifted the markets higher. And now the cheap money flow is stopping. I mentioned China. Do you know China's debt went from, in 1996, China's total debt, corporate and government debt, was $900 billion. Today it's approaching $30 trillion.
Mm.
They can't – now there's a the Chinese yuan, they are not, by the way, they are not driving it down lower because, to sell more, export more product. Because 77% of China's GDP, compared to ours at 70, is based on consumer spending. Their yuan in June lost more in 1 month since the time that China got into the system in 1994.
Yeah, they could be hurting.
And I mentioned to you what's going on with the rupee. It's at a low. So with our concern, the reason all of these are going down, it goes back to interest rates. The higher the interest rates go, the cheaper these currencies fall, and all these emerging markets, what did they borrow? I think they have $11 trillion in debt. Oh, and it's dollar denominated. So you're looking, for example, you mentioned Venezuela before, the Bolivia, mm-hmm. the Bolivar, the peso in Argentina. All these currencies are crashing. They have to pay back their debt. So go back to February when the Trump rally ended. What ended it? The fear of rising interest rates. So watch interest rates, and that's your story, bottom line, as we see it.
Well, and the Fed is increasing it every month now.
Yep, and again, you look at the new numbers. There was a significant drop in a total mortgage application volume. It was down 13% lower than the same week 1 year ago. So as again, this whole and by the way, over 50% of the mortgages in this country are under 4%. So now with the mortgage rates going up
they go.
Yep. So that's what our concern is if they raise interest rates too fast, we're going to see the economy going down, because that's what brought the markets down, was the fear of aggressively rising interest rates. They have to keep the cheap money flow going.
What's your take, trends-wise, about North Korea? And do you trust Kim Jong-un?
I don't trust any of them, in any country. But we always said, George, North Korea was not going to be a threat. And again, for a number of reasons. Number one, their GDP is half the size of West Virginia's. The country has the size of population of Texas, and they are heavily armed. So if the United States or any other country attack them, say goodbye to 35 miles from the DMZ called Seoul, South Korea, with a metropolitan population of about 20 million people. So we never saw war there. What North Korea wants is they want to do business. And Trump is the art of the deal. So we believe this is just going to be a business deal. And that's what North Korea wants more than anything. And China wants it too. They don't want nuclear weapons on the peninsula, neither does Russia. So we think that's not the one to watch. The one to us, we think that's going to be a done deal. And the one that we're concerned about the most is what's going on with Iran.
I was just going to ask you that. That could be the tinderbox.
Yeah, because what you also looked at what happened when President Trump just put that latest round of sanctions on Iran. And you saw oil prices now, they're hitting, 2014 highs. Not highs, levels. So now let's go back to the consumer. The average consumer, the tax cut that they got from Trump, the average middle-class family, was around $1,000. Half of that's already been eaten up with rising gasoline prices. I mentioned to you about the emerging markets. Oil is dollar-based, petrodollars. So as their currencies get weaker, they have to spend more just to buy energy.
Mm-hmm.
So now going back to Iran, now pulling them out of the nuclear deal, pulling more supply off the marketplace is driving up oil prices. That could have a big negative effect. If war breaks out in the Middle East with Iran, you're going to see $100 a barrel oil and we're forecasting a global market meltdown. I talked about China. The Shanghai Index is in bear territory. It's down over 20%.
Huge.
So they can't take a shock. And if there's an oil shock, there'll be an economic shock.
Now, there seems to be internal conflict at Iran. They may get tossed out just from within.
They may get tossed out from within. And by the way, we're writing a lot about that in the Trends Journal. But there's also another element, and that is outside forces also pushing for regime change.
Yes, absolutely. You know, we've been involved with that. We got the Shah installed again back in the early days. That fell apart. And now it's a cycle, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, what you just said, how many people really know that? How the MI6 and the CIA overthrew the Shah. By the way, in 2017, they finally released the CIA documents. It didn't make it into one U.S. newspaper. I read it in the Financial Times. Winston Churchill, they were pushing the United States to overthrow the Shah. And, of course, back then, there were two companies that owned the Iranian oil. And their names back then were Anglo-Iranian Oil and Standard Oil.
That's right. Standard was everywhere.
Yeah, and yeah.
British.
And right, Anglo-Iranians, better known today as BP. And there's the words of Winston Churchill saying, we need that oil. We want that oil. And they launched the coup. So going back to Iran, you're hearing more and more both, they have a 30% unemployment rate of young people there. Their rial, their currency, is crashed down to nothing levels. Their inflation rate is skyrocketing. So yes, there's going to be both internal and external pressure to bring Iran down.
And most of the citizenry of Iran, Gerald, loves the Western way of life.
Exactly. And again, it was because they radicalized the revolution. That's why countries should stay out of these things. Because when you radicalize them, that's what you end up getting. And of course, I mean, these are the Persians. You know, they've been around a long time.
Yeah.
They're very cultured, popular people, you know. They want peace. But again, you have these secular governments in charge.
All right, stay with us, Gerald. We're going to take a quick break at the top of the hour. We will come back with another final hour to go with you and phone calls. Gerald Celente with us. His website, trendsresearch.com, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He is the number one trend analyst in the world. And I got to tell you, he puts out some great information all the time. So stick with us. Get ready to make a phone call. It's the interactive portion of the show. Later on tonight, Joshua P. Warren joins us as well.